The United States Agency for International Development wants to channel a river of big data into an analysis program that can power management decisions. The agency has a request for information out to find ways to transform the data into a more useful and visually intuitive form. Mark Peterson is Division Chief for Data and Analytics at USAID. He has the details on what kind of data the agency has and what it wants to do with it. Mark, it's terrific to talk to you. Thanks for coming on the program today. How is your agency using data today in ways that it wasn't using it maybe a year ago or 2 years ago or 5 years ago? Thanks for coming on today, Mark.
Well, Francis, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. In terms of how USAID is using data differently today, there are a couple ways. There's a key change that's been happening over the past several years, and that's that data is becoming cheaper, and the technologies that let us collect that data and tap into it are becoming more advanced and more widespread. And so that gives us opportunities to gather and to apply data in places where it just wasn't practical before. So for example, we can use improved satellite imagery to understand which villages have regular access to electricity by seeing what parts of the world are lit up at night and what parts are still in the dark. And thanks to the increasing availability of cell phones, there are places like Indonesia where what people tweet about the price of rice or about how hard it is to find work can give us almost real-time information about some of the development challenges we're facing. So taking advantage of that wider reach of data is one of the ways that we're using data differently. A second way is that we're tapping into the expertise and the enthusiasm of the broader community. So as you know, a core part of our mission as an agency is to eradicate extreme poverty. And the chance to do that, honestly, is what keeps us excited to come into the office each day. And what we want to do is engage others who are excited about that goal, too. So right now, we're implementing a policy that will make nearly all of our data public in machine-readable, non-proprietary formats, so others can use that data, too. And that lets us partner more effectively with people outside the agency. So, for example, we're running a hackathon now, which will happen in late spring, that's going to bring together app developers and data analysts to use publicly available data to answer questions that are being put forward by our own missions in Latin America. And the participants that will be there will be contributing their knowledge and their expertise for free. So we bring the data, they generate the insights. And so those are just a couple of the ways that we're making more effective use of data today.
When you do something like that hackathon, which sounds very cool, by the way, and I'll look forward to following up with you either right before or right after, or both maybe, and finding out how that worked out, do you have a sense of the kinds of things that you will hope that people will use the opened data for? Or is it your sense that we now know enough about data to know people do cool things with it, and let's just put it out there and see what we get?
Well, it's both of those. So I think certainly when we open up some of these data sets, we have a sense of what people can do with them and honestly what we're hoping that people will do with them. So from mapping where our activities and where the activities of other countries and other NGOs and donors are, that's information that can help us better understand where to target our own programs. That's an example of something we could reasonably expect people to do with the data that we're putting out there. But we also expect a lot of people are going to come up with really creative ways to generate insights from this data and to combine it with other data that's already available that will inform our programs in ways that we just can't anticipate. And that's been shown in the private sector, has been shown in our sector in international development as well.
My personal bias when thinking about data, Mark, is to think about it just as information like in documents and on spreadsheets. And you've talked about a couple of things. Collecting information from tweets, for example, or video, or geospatial data, or different things like that, that don't come to my mind since I'm not a data scientist. What forms of data are most common for you to use at your agency?
Well, you're right. So traditionally, much of the data that USAID has used has been household surveys. It's been monitoring and evaluation assessments of our programs. And typically, these were in paper format, you know, back in the day. But more and more, these are being collected in structured, machine-readable format. And so we're using today a lot more technologies that make it easier and faster to collect data. And examples of these are satellite imagery, the different kinds of data that get generated by mobile devices and by sensors on the ground. And so these could be readings of water meters in rural villages, or they could be what somebody tweets about their symptoms when they're feeling sick.
We have a link to the RFI that you're putting out at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. What do you hope to learn from this RFI, Mark?
Well, we want to develop a quick turnaround support mechanism mechanism that our units can tap into to get help with their data and analytical needs. And so to help us develop that mechanism, this RFI has two aims. One is to get a better understanding of the industry's technical capabilities. You know, what are the techniques that organizations could bring to the table and could help us apply to our own data and analytical needs? And what did we miss? Are there cutting-edge analytical techniques that we didn't think of that could actually have substantial benefit in international development? And then the second aim is to understand how industry actually could respond to requests within the scope of work that eventually gets put out for this mechanism. How long would it take them to respond to requests? How much capacity do they have? Could they take on many requests at once? Questions like that.
You've got five principles listed in this RFI that are integral, you say, to the support that you need from industry. Can you review each of those for me and give me just a thumbnail on what they mean and how they pertain to what you want to get?
Absolutely. Well, the first one is rapid response. So as timeliness of analytical and or research support is critical for informing decisions that often have their own deadlines, we need technical services that have the ability to be deployed and completed rapidly. So we're talking within weeks sometimes of the initial request. The second is that the services need to be adaptable and flexible. The technical approach needs to be able to support work and audiences across a wide range of sectors and countries. We work in over 80 countries in democracy and governments, food security, global health, a really wide range. The third is intellectual partnership. So to extract maximum learning from the services that are being provided, we're looking for technical approaches that will allow us to collaborate productively and that are going to facilitate iterative sharing of the knowledge and the product development with other operating units around the agency. The fourth is capacity building. So to increase the utility of the products and the services provided, to be able to integrate them into existing systems and to take those methods and products and be able to not only build capacity within USAID, but to help our host country counterparts also do a better job going forward of applying data and analysis to their decision-making as well. And then the last principle is technical excellence. So obviously, the products and the methods that we bring in through this mechanism need to be rigorous. They need to be transparent. Needs to be something that the folks who are using them are going to understand how they work, and then when appropriate, reproducible. And so we really want to maximize state-of-the-art science and practices, but do so in a way that's going to increase understanding and allow people to understand how the conclusions are being arrived at.
I want to pick on the fourth one there, the capacity building part of this, because you write about in this RFI about capacity constraints. Are you referring to constraints at USAID or in the host countries, as you mentioned, or both? And what kind of constraints are those, and how would reducing them or removing them help you benefit your operations?
Well, it's both. So as you know, any organization is going to have constraints. Those may come from budget. It may come from staffing levels. It may come just from the type of work that needs to get done. And so this RFI isn't about removing those constraints. It's about operating more intelligently within them. So as an example, USAID's operating units are often hit with unexpected demands that require a quick response. The Ebola epidemic in West Africa is just a perfect example of this. But we still want that response to be based on the best possible evidence and on the best possible analysis of the situation. But a unit may not have the time or the resources to hire new staff that's expert in that particular challenge in order to address that need. In that case, it makes sense to bring that expertise in from the outside. Sometimes we also know that the need's going to be temporary, too. So, for example, in the case of a natural disaster, or we may know that it's not going to be a big part of what the unit does on an ongoing basis. And so since a need may be temporary, it makes sense for us to contract out for it on an as-needed basis. Now, so that's USAID's capacity. Certainly, we also want to build capacity within our host country counterparts as well. And oftentimes there, what's really needed is training. An investment that will allow them to be able to reproduce the types of analyses and approaches that we may bring in so that we don't have to be making that contribution again and again and again, but we can help them build that own internal capacity so that they're able to sort of take it and run with it.
Now, this RFI also alludes to training capacity or capabilities that you would like somebody, the respondents, to tell you more about. Do you have specific applications or methods or any structures like that in mind, or do you just want to try to survey the landscape and see what possibilities are available?
Well, the RFI certainly aims to survey the landscape and understand what the capabilities are out there in industry that we might be able to bring in. In terms of the needs around training, I mean, certainly there are applications of data and analysis where we're getting a lot of demand from our overseas missions and from our operating units within Washington, which would benefit from being able to put together training programs. So one example is futures analysis. So taking a long-term but data-centric and evidence-based look at some of the global trends that are relevant for our work, urbanization, demographic shifts, climate change, and being able to train people on how to apply those sorts of methodologies to the strategic decisions that they're having to make.
The latest download that I saw of the RFI is that the response date is tomorrow. The deadline's tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern time. Is that still the case?
That is.
All right. And do you have a timeline for moving forward after you get all your responses by tomorrow at 2?
Once we gather the responses and see the end of that deadline, we're going to take a look at everything that's come in and use that to adjust our timeline. But we're hoping to have a request for proposals out in the early to mid-summer and actually have the award done before the fall.